Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Black Fire Podcast, the business of entrepreneurs. You can listen every week on BashaniRadio.com or download the app in the App Store for iPhones and Android at Bashani Radio app. Black Fire Podcast explores all the areas of entrepreneurship. It is our mission to help you understand all things that help you grow. And visit us online at blackfire.com. That's BlackFiya.com. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Black Fire Podcast, the business of entrepreneurs. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Black Fire Podcast, the business of entrepreneurs. You can reach out to us at BashaniRadio.com or you can download the app in the App Store for iPhones and Androids. On today's episode of Black Fire Podcast, we have Dr. Janelle Chase Mayers. Is a creative and systematic therapist, a master facilitator, and a current PhD scholar. Dr. J uses sociometry, I'm probably saying that wrong, but I'll correct it later, and experimental activities to engage her audience to create movement and change within their particular social spaces. She is committed to facilitating training and webinars in mental health and optimal performance, redefining corporate spaces, business, and families. Dr. J has worked as a leading therapist and facilitator for 12 years at the SAF Inc. and Therapeutic Alliance Wellness. Well, all right. And she got a lot more to go, but you're going to have to go to the website for that because we only got a certain amount of time, okay? Hey, Dr. J, thank you for being over here on the Black Fire Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm enjoying life. So, yeah, that's a good place to start.
That's what's important. I want to get right into this conversation of mental health and particularly, you know, mental health in the Black community. And what has been your experience in the mental health industry as it pertains to African-American communities? Because a lot of times we shy away from even going to any type of therapist, like, you know, oh, you'll get well. You know how it goes, in at least when in the South where I was from, it was more like, you know, boy, you'll be all right. You ain't got to go talk to no, pay a whole lot of money to talk to some people to tell you what your problems. I could tell you what your problems. You know what I mean? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that experience in the African-American community.
So funny enough, so you're from the South. I went to school in Louisiana.
Yeah.
The University of Louisiana at Monroe.
Yeah, I was born in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, so I love the South. But one of the things that a lot of people don't even recognize is that a lot of people in the South actually do get help. I did my master's in marriage and family therapy, and in my practicums, pre-practicum and stuff like that, there was a lot of African-American communities that we served.
Oh, really? That's interesting to know because most of the time, I personally didn't know nobody who went to therapy when I was growing up, personally. So I'm glad to hear the statistics. Let's go.
Yeah, we're talking 18 years ago, you know, when I was doing my master's. So, and what was also interesting, especially the field that I come from in terms of marriage and family therapy, a lot of Black and brown community actually served in learning about marriage and family therapy, which is the whole concept of systems. So we take the pathology out of mental health. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at how systems impact interpersonal relationships, which makes it a little different. So people would come because they were not bothered of whether or not they would have a diagnosis. Now that's not changed because insurance has a way of getting in the way of people's health. And if you don't have insurance, then you can't access certain level of care. But the reality of it is that a lot of people, especially where I went to school and in the southern communities, did go to therapy. And I think it's actually getting more prevalent now, 18 years later, where the Black and brown communities are being represented in the psychological and mental health spaces. So a lot of it had to do with, could I be represented when I needed care? And for the most part, as you will very well know, the representation came from the church. Mm-hmm. Just pray about it.
Absolutely.
You know, get on your knees and pray. But the danger in just praying about it is that faith without works is dead.
Mm.
So prayer must have action. And if action means that you have to go to a therapist that may understand some of the challenges or help unlock some of the unconscious biases that we carry with each other, you know, wherever we are in the Black and brown community, I'm from Barbados, born and raised in Barbados, and I always tell people, you know, like we can't have conversations about mental health without having conversations about men, about slavery.
Mm.
You can't.
And that,
you know, it's embedded in your culture.
Wow, that's very powerful. So let me ask you this, Dr. J. Where did a lot of these biases come from as it pertains to mental health? Now, I'm glad to hear what you said about the statistic, but I'm a lot older than 18. So, you know, there may be a slightly different experience. I mean, I look like I'm 18, but I'm a lot older than 18 years ago.
I know.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So where did a lot of the bias and taboo start when it, as it pertains to the African-American community and seeking out therapy? Because there's a lot of other cultures that seek out therapy on a regular and even from a young age. Is it partially because of the economic aspect of it, or that we had not been exposed to the wellness of seeking therapy?
Okay, am I allowed to get really deep?
You are free to speak because your mind. We don't have no restrictions over here at Black Fire Podcast, okay?
And why I say that is I want your listeners to research a word called drapetomania. And drapetomania existed when Black slaves tried to run away and become free.
Mm-hmm.
And they were labeled with a mental illness. So let us soak in for a second, right? There's a beautiful lady in the Black community, African-American community called Joy DeGruy, Dr. Joy DeGruy, a PhD social worker researcher. And she has this, she's coined this term, post-traumatic slave syndrome. When we think about accessing help and we think about accessing care, and when you thought about leaving your enslavement and you were then labeled to have a mental illness because you were trying to run away.
Wow.
These communities did not stand a chance to access care.
So let me get that.
There are other marginalized communities.
Let me get that. Let me understand. Make sure my listeners hear this clearly. You're saying that when slaves wanted to escape and be free, they was labeled as having some type of mental illness. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Wow. Absolutely. Great to me. Yeah.
Wow. That's you just blew my mind on that one. Proceed.
Yes. So we have a situation where getting care looks like if there was something wrong with you, even at the beginning. And let's fast forward a couple of years, right? And fast forward a couple of years, you know, you're trying to seek help, but in seeking help, you're always told there's nothing wrong with you, or, you know, you're lazy, or or you need to get it together, or then people are not going to seek care as an option. They're going to seek care as a victimization experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're not going to want to seek treatment, because then every time you go to, and at that time, you know, the language would have been a shrink, is like, you're crazy, you're mad. But I love the way how Dr. Joey DeGruy talks about it, you know. Slaves are free, no therapy. Try to get equal rights, no therapy, right? The continual marginalizations in terms of communities and drugs being put into communities, no therapy. So how are we going to heal? If we've ended a lot of things, but we've never had conversations about healing, when we've ended, what we've now passed on is intergenerational trauma without even understanding that we've passed the trauma on. And so a lot of the behaviors that are downright traumatic to our experiences as Black people continue to perpetuate it, and we don't even know that we're perpetuating it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so care then looks different when then all your care can give you is that your caretaker doesn't look like you. The person who's providing psychological support does not understand the biases that you come with. And so I would say in the last 15 years, it's gotten a lot better because, as I was just talking about before, more people of color are actually getting involved in helping individuals, right? But then there's still a systemic issue. There are a lot of systemic injustices, the type of care that's going to be provided. And a lot of people don't know this, but diagnosis gives people money. So now we have a situation where we have a lot of our Black males that are labeled ADD and ADHD, which may not necessarily be in some of these matters. And I'm not saying that people don't have psychological disorders, but if you go do the research, their rates are way higher. And then we have to talk about mental health and nutrition. The thing is that, you know, a lot of the community, people don't eat healthy. They don't understand how to eat fruits. They don't understand how to use greens to actually help with their brain health. So now there's a whole system that's actually backlogged because you're not eating properly. You don't know about exercise. All of those things impact your brain health, which there's a lot of room now talking, like, let's stop talking about mental health and let's start talking about what creates the challenges, which is your brain, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And if your brain's not functioning well, you can't make good decisions. Because mental health then has the word, like, there's something wrong with you. But let's figure out what's wrong with you. There are challenges with your brain, which is your hardware, your biological hardware, and then your software, which is your programming, our experiences of life, which have been thwarted by our traumatic experiences. You know, how do we start to get well?
Absolutely. So let me ask you this, Dr. J, then. So if what I'm understanding correctly for me and my listeners is very simple, that your physical and mental health coincide with each other.
And then I
would like to add, you know, on to that. So your mental, physical, and your spiritual connect with that.
Absolutely.
But what I'm getting from you, which is quite eye-opening, is it seems like this word mental illness has been used as a weapon against people mm-hmm. of color. And the weapon only works when you actually believe it. And a lot of times tend to believe things other cultures tells us about ourselves than what we believe about ourselves. Can you talk to that, please?
Absolutely. And I love the way how you framed it. So let's talk about African movies. And I don't know how many people watched, right? But have you ever heard mental illness words used in African movies?
The few African movies I've seen, no.
No.
Not at all. Not, I mean, the few
I've
seen.
So where's the language? Where's the language coming from? Yeah.
Outside the culture.
So where's the language coming from? Yeah, outside of the culture. And remember, if we think about our African roots, we have healers, we have shamans, we have people, when we recognize that people's nervous systems aren't working well, that we create opportunities in the community to heal them. So even how we heal as an African culture looks different. Even how we hold space for each other looks different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start to kind of dissect the nature of brain health and helping people to understand that, okay, let's look at what's going on in your lobes. You know, do you know the parts of the brain? Do you understand how food impacts the part of the brain? Do you understand how movement and the types of movements that you're doing are impacting the type of brain? The show with you, I was actually looking at some research in terms of that 90% of, there's one study in 2017 that looked at football players, and they donated their brains after they died, and 90% of the 207 brains had deficiencies going on in relation to being hit. What do most of our Black males play? What do they grow up playing?
Football.
Football.
Yep.
Trauma to the head. Trauma to the head will impair mood, will impair stability, and can impact your mental health and your brain health in a very large way. So it's larger than just an illness. And there are a lot of schools of thought that are trying to get people to have the conversation about, is this good for your brain? Is that toxic relationship with the person who wants to bust your window out your car good for your brain? Is drinking Hennessy every single night good for your brain? Now, if we approach it from the mental health, somebody will say, yeah, you know, I need that because I need to reduce my stress.
Mm-hmm.
But we're aware that these things aren't good for your brain. So if it's not good for your brain, it means that you can't make good decisions for your life.
You know what I think is ironic, Dad, when you talked about the athletes, is that, you know, they are paid a lot of money to go out and play a sport that in later life may debilitate them in many different ways because of the constant hitting, you know, and the constant shots, you know, to the brain.
Yeah.
And people, mm-hmm. And then when these people go through these circumstances where we've seen, you know, in the media, because where it is now, though, you know, everything is on the media. You've seen where, you know, some of these guys have committed suicide. Some of these guys have had, you know, mental issues out in the public. Some of these guys have become aggressive, and nobody's going back to the root cause of how did they get there. So let's talk about getting help before it happens instead of talking about what help we need to get after it happens. What would be your prognosis for prevention of these type of things?
You're talking my language right here, because I am in the realm of prevention. I think first that we start is, like I was sharing earlier, the change in the language from mental health to brain health. Right? How well are you taking care of your brain, and how well are you taking care of your body? You know, how well are you taking care of that heart? That's the first place I'll start. Another place I'll start is, what's your vision for your mental health? If we keep the work, what's your vision in your relationship with your children? What's your vision in your relationship with your job? Mm-hmm. What's your vision in relationship to your partner? You know, and I tell people, you know, all of us want, we want what? Generational wealth. You know, people ask that. And I said, what about generational mental health? Let's pass that down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start coining that phrase where we're passing down healthy interpersonal relationships that allow people to think and feel and act congruent with what's going on around them, that actually allows them to walk in their purpose. And I tell my clients that I work with all the time and all the people that I coach in terms of mental health, right? I said, what's the vision? If you're not clear, we're carrying a vision for our relationship, we're carrying a vision for our jobs or the career or entrepreneurship that we want, but you're not clear on your mental health. They're not clear about how your brain works.
Very, very powerful. And just in case you're just joining us, you're listening to Blackfire Podcast on Bashani Radio. We believe that these type of conversations are necessary and an asset to the community as a whole. And we're speaking to Dr. J. And her name is Dr. Janelle Mayers. But I just call her Dr. J for short here. And we're talking about mental health in the African-American community and some of the things that are cause it. And what I want to move on to, Dr. J, is what can we do after signs are shown? Because a lot of times people do not get the help that they need until it's too late, when they have an interaction with law enforcement. And, you know, law enforcement, well, I'm not going to say that, but let's just say that some people don't know how to handle people with a mental illness, so all they know how to do is to be as aggressive as possible, and that usually leads to the death of the individual, you know, who happens to be a person of color, you know, because they didn't know how to handle that situation. And there's been many situations where social workers and mental health professionals should have been called versus calling an officer who only knows how to detain, you know what I mean, and restrain, but they don't know how to help this person get through this episode. Can we talk a little bit about that, please?
So I think it's twofold. I think one is you always have to have a level of social justice when we're having conversations about mental health and exactly what you're speaking about. What I found in the work that I've been doing is that a lot of mental health practitioners do not like to talk about the preventative standpoint or do not like to educate the people who are most impacted by people who may have mental health issues or mental health challenges. So I think there's an element of training, and I think there are a lot of my colleagues who started to do it because they're tired now. You know, they're tired of having the same rhetoric over and over. So I think that you cannot seek help or seek elements of social justice without engaging the individuals who may have to take matters into their own hands, right? Mm-hmm. But I think another component is having the conversation about emotional regulation with care providers that look like you.
You better preach that one.
Happens,
that's why we're talking to you, Dr. J, because you look like us.
I taught a class tonight about understanding cultural diversity and understanding the importance of being worldly. Like I tell my students who are budding psychologists and social workers that, you know, you cannot serve somebody if you do not know how to get into their world. So when you have an individual who has challenges or have gone to the point, and I worked in a all-male residential rehab, drug rehab for 12 years, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe it was because I experienced I had an aunt who was an alcoholic, died of chronic alcoholism at the age of 53, but I was able to speak to their world, maybe not to their gender, but to speak into their world because I had experienced something very similar and having to live with an aunt. And almost like my mom always shares the stories that she almost burnt me, you know, to a crisp when I was younger because she fell asleep drunk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's one of the keys, is to get an individual who can speak some of your language. And for the moms and the fathers, you know, and the loved ones and the partners out there, there's an element of panic that happens when you're trying to deal with a crisis, but I invite people to pause for a second and really research who they're taking their loved ones to, because that can make or break that person's ability to recover. And I'm speaking from the perspective of where I live in the Caribbean, and it's hard to watch people go into the psychiatric hospital and not have an out because maybe that wasn't the route that they needed to go. Maybe the route was that they needed to go to a private psychiatrist who could provide an opportunity for them to be heard and seen and perhaps better care to be taken. But then when they just got lumped into the system, that was it. And it's important because I see a lot of people losing their loved ones because they get caught up in a system that may not necessarily be created to get them out. You know, you want to seek people who have results.
Absolutely.
And the mental health profession is a skilled profession. People need to show you that they're having results. Go to somebody who's having results.
That is very powerful. I mean, we can go on and on. We only got a few minutes left. But I think we're definitely going to have you on again. And what I want to get into, you know, in these last few minutes is how important of having representation. And what I mean by that, I think you hit something so powerful. When people tend to go to people that look like them and have an understanding of what their culture has gone through and what they may be going through, I would think that it would be a benefit to the therapist that's helping them, and it'll also be a benefit to the patient when somebody can truly understand. Because I don't care what nobody says, each culture has their culture norms and abnorms. And it's important for the person who's helping you to be able to truly tap into, and not just from a curriculum point, you know, place a point, but from, you know, an experience of, you know, you are a black woman, a person of color, you're going to have a different understanding outside of the curriculum education, you know, walls of it. How important is it for us to have more representation in this particular industry, and why don't we when it comes to mental health?
It's very important. I think you hit the nail on the head that, you know, somebody that looks like you may be able to share your experience just as much as you can. But I think one of the key reasons why it's so important is that it creates empowerment for growth. And you're less judged by the actions because people can connect the dots as to why you are how you are. And I think that's important because what a lot of people don't understand, especially when you're in the mental health profession, empathy and therapeutic alliance are the two things that we bark on. You know, we embark on to actually be effective practitioners. So if you have to spend time explaining to me why this particular thing bothers you, you have to spend 2 to 3 sessions. It means that in terms of efficacy, I can't do the work that I'm supposed to do. You know, and it goes both ways, not only in the Black and Brown community, but, you know, in other communities that may not be able to identify with what I'm sharing because I may not be culturally diverse, you know. So I think it's very, very important for us to understand that the representation matters. But in terms of the last part of the question, why are they not enough helping? Now, I guess my programs that I've gone through are very biased because I've always had an opportunity to sit with other people of color. And it's different for me because I don't use the word minority because I come from the Caribbean and we're 95% Black.
Right, exactly.
So it's hard.
It's a little bit different over there.
It's hard for me to say minority. Yeah, we're a little different. I remember one of my professors saying that, you know, so let's have a conversation about, you know, minorities in the health and profession. I said, oh, Dr. A, like, I'm not a minority where I come from. He's like, what? You're not. And he didn't mean it in a facetious way. He just didn't put the dots together, right?
Right.
So I think ultimately, because there is a element of being a minority in the African-American community in the state, you're going to find that a lot more people are not going to be willing to go into the mental health profession, right? Because other people are trying to be lawyers, they're trying to be doctors. So, you know, they're trying to have representation in every space.
So
this is not the only space that people want to have representation in.
So you,
however, I will tell you that it changes.
So
right, and I don't know if it's because it's a token economy, but the incoming president of the American Psychological Association is a black female. So it's starting to change.
Okay, so maybe we just need a little bit more time.
Maybe not at the rate that we want them to change.
Absolutely. I think what has happened to the digital landscape, you know, the internet has allowed people to be seen also and connect with people they probably would have never known, you know, because if it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't be having this conversation right here. So I guess that's the beauty of being able to connect with people, you know, from around the world, even on this show, you know, we're able to reach millions of people around the world based on being able to funnel this through the internet via our apps and everything. So I think we're coming around to another, you know, it's a benefit being able to communicate with people across the world and being able to meet people, like you said, you know, you don't call yourself a minority over there because where you're at, you are the majority. You know, but in America, we have a different experience. And that's another thing that allows us, you know, it's important to have that representation, you know, in this industry and a lot of other industries so that we can get a full spectrum of the availability of the type of help and things that are available that many times, you know, we're just not simply aware or they haven't experienced it.
Yeah.
You know, for that. So if people want to learn more about you, Dr. J.C. Myers, where could they learn more about you?
So I'm J.C. Myers on all platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and J.C. Myers, JACEMAYERS.com, and then LinkedIn as well, too, so I kind of kept it simple. Haven't jumped on the Twitter bandwagon yet, but I'm sure I'll jump on it.
Yeah, you out there. You don't need to be everyone. They say you got to find one and dominate that and then go to the next one.
Exactly. Instagram is my jam. Instagram is my jam.
All right. So what on Instagram, you are J.C. Myers?
Yeah, JACEEMAYERS.
All right. So hit her up on Instagram and see what she's doing
over
there.
Come do some wellness retreats in Barbados.
Okay, there you go. You heard it right here on Black Fire Podcast, the business of entrepreneurs. Make sure you join us next week or visit us online at blackfire.com. That's black, BLACKFIYA.com. Not fire, but fire. And you know what it is, the business of entrepreneurs, and sign up to our VIP list and make sure you download the Bashani Radio app so you can hear this episode and all other episodes of Black Fire Worldwide. And until next time, this is the Black Fire Podcast. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on another edition of Black Fire Podcast, the business of entrepreneurs. Join us each and every week for another powerful episode. It is our mission to bring you all things about entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. You can download the Bashani free app at Bashani Radio app for your iPhones or Android. Or you can listen online at BashaniRadio.com. Or you can visit us online at BlackFire.com. That's BLACKFIYA.com. We love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night.